Hello, and welcome to the IRPP's interview with the author series. My name is Heather Neal. My guest today is Philippe Lagacé. He is an assistant professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Ottawa and a research associate with the Center for Security and Defense Studies at Norman Patterson School of International Affairs at Carleton University. He is also the author of the study, Accountability for National Defense, Ministerial Responsibility, Military Command, and Parliamentary Oversight, published by the IRPP. Welcome.
Hello.
So let me start by asking you to explain what prompted you to conduct this research.
Over the past couple of years, there have been quite a few debates within the defense community in particular about how we might improve Parliament's role or better Parliament's involvement in both the formulation of national defense policy in Canada, but also in terms of how parliamentarians hold the government to account for national defense. And most recently, with the publication of retired General Hillier's recent autobiography, Hillier made the point that he felt that within the way that defense is governed within the government is very poor at this time, because he felt that there was undue interference on the part of senior civil servants into military affairs. And that this was something totally inappropriate from his point of view. Now, Hillier made this comment, he was echoing a lot of the work that's come out by a scholar called Doug Bland, who's also been quite critical of how this came out and how defense is organized and how the military and the civil service work together on that level. So all these things together led me to really question whether a lot of the presuppositions that are out there with regard to accountability for national defense held, and if there was a different point of view. So that's really the guiding principle that led me to examine these questions.
Okay, so how do your findings differ to what the critics have been saying about national defense accountability?
Well, I differ in a number of ways, and I'll just lay it out. The first point that I think needs to be made is that from a constitutional point of view, there seems to be a lot of misunderstanding in Canada about precisely where the authority for national defense derives from. I think it's in the popular mindset and in the work of quite a few people, it seems to have this image that the authority for national defense derives from the Parliament, when in fact that's actually not true. Constitutionally speaking, defense is still really a matter of concern primarily to the Crown, and most of the authority for national defense is derived from the Crown. And that's important simply for a lot of the recommendations for reform that are out there. Because they overlook that fact, they seem to imply that there are a number of reforms that could be easily undertaken, which in reality might undermine the precise measures of accountability that we used to really hold the government account for national defense. And one of these in particular has been the suggestion that the House of Commons, in particular, should hold regular votes or should have the authority to decide when the Canadian Armed Forces are deployed internationally on mission. And part of the reason that this has become almost a commonplace assumption in the recent years is that votes have been held for the past two extensions of the mission in Afghanistan. And so commentators such as the respected historian Professor Granstein have made the point that this should be an absolute necessity for any deployment of the Canadian forces. Now, the point that I try to make in the piece is that while that might be a very strong idea in terms of democratic legitimacy, at least on the surface, the problem is that it could actually undermine accountability for those types of missions in the future. And what I mean by that is that in the end, the great strength of the Westminster system, and in particular in Canada, is that it focuses responsibility for certain decisions squarely on the government of the day, those that have the right to make these types of decisions. And when you start sharing that responsibility with the House of Commons, and in particular where you'd either have it as a free vote or a binding vote in minority governments, that that I argue would dilute accountability simply because responsibility for the mission would be somewhat shared in a sense, at least in terms of public perception, between the House of Commons and the government, and that would weaken the official opposition's ability or even other parties' ability to hold the government to account for those decisions. So that's one of the main points that I try and make. Another point that I try and make is when it comes to making committees less partisan, for example, I argue that, again, while that might sound good in theory when it comes to national defense, that'll take away from the marketplace of ideas that partisan competition and partisan adversity forces committees to have. That is to say that we want to be in a position where different parties will come up with different recommendations and question defense policy in different manners so that parties can really have a different avenue and different way of presenting policies related to national defense. And in particular, we want to avoid the idea that we might arrive at a single way to view national defense and a single way to understand how the country should run national defense policy. Other findings that I'm trying to propose here are that committees should not get overly involved in the formulation of defense policy, that their purpose really should be restricted to oversight. And here the point that I make, and it's a point that it runs throughout the paper, is that ministerial responsibility is the way that we hold the government to account in our system, and that needs to be maintained. And what that means, in effect, is that, again, focusing responsibility for major decisions, such as defense policy, squarely on members of the cabinet and not trying to share that with committees, because that makes it far more difficult thereafter for Parliament to decide who is responsible and who's accountable for the policies that are undertaken. In that same vein, I try and argue, what I try and demonstrate is that despite the appeal that we have looking to the United States and seeing that their military officers are far more forthcoming in front of their congressional committees in terms of the advice that they give, in terms of how they lay out their options and their personal points of view, this idea that we should have members of the military being far franker in front of parliamentary committees about the advice that they give to ministers or even how decisions were made in the past really should be questioned. We do have a tradition in the Canadian system that there is no public disagreement on matters of policy between civil servants and the military and ministers, and that needs to be maintained. The reason for that is, were you to allow members of the military to voice their disagreements with ministers, there would be a breach of trust, there would be a crisis of civil-military relations, really, within the government, wherein the government or the minister would not feel that he or she can trust military advice or where how the military might use that advice in front of parliamentary committees thereafter. The basic point that I'm making there is that the military, being a servant of the Crown, again, does not have a role in helping to keep the government to account. That is a role that is strictly reserved for parliamentarians, and in particular for opposition members of Parliament to hold the government to account, and we shouldn't expect that they would have the military assisting them in that regard. Now, in terms of the rest of the study, the rest of the study really looks at General Hillier's contention that civilian bureaucrats play an inappropriate role in keeping the military accountable to the Minister of National Defense. And what I do throughout that section of the paper is looking at various statute laws and looking at the history of civil-military relations in Canada to explain why, in fact, that's simply not the case, and however much we may wonder how this system came about and why it came about the way it did, it is very necessary, and it's in line and in keeping with norms of civil-military relations and practice in other Western countries.
So, would you say that this is a particularly charged context in which to open up a dialogue of this nature? I'm referring specifically to allegations of torture of Afghan detainees, as well as the recent murder charges laid against a senior Canadian military official.
I think this is a very important time to be having this discussion about accountability for national defense for two reasons. First off, as we already see, with the confrontation between the opposition parliamentarians currently and the government about the release of documents and about what national security privileges and so forth, we need to be clear about who plays what role and the how we arrived at a situation where so much attention is now focused on the detainee issue that we forget that the political parties aren't really even discussing, the major political parties anyway, aren't even really discussing the mission itself anymore in Afghanistan. And why, how did that come about? This isn't to downplay the detainee scandal at all. It's simply to say that it's the fact that so much opposition effort is now devoted to that says something about how it is that the mission itself seems to have fallen off the debate. Moreover, when we do finally get into the details of this, of what occurred with the detainee transfer, there are going to be a lot of questions about where lines of authority lay and who played what role. And this is really where I think the study tries to clarify who plays what role within the government with respect to national defense. And when we, if we do finally arrive at an independent inquiry, for example, I believe the study will be helpful to people who are trying to understand where lines of accountability lie and who should have been responsible for what when decisions were made.
So, in conclusion, what in your view needs to be done to improve national defense accountability, and is there an argument for maintaining the status quo?
I think there is a strong argument for maintaining the status quo in a number of areas. First off, when it comes to who decides what, when it comes to military deployments, I think there's a strong argument to be made to reinforce the fact that this is an executive decision and should be a decision made solely by the governing cabinet to ensure that they and they alone are held accountable for that decision. And all the repercussions that flow from it. Secondly, that partisan adversity, as we're seeing, is critical for national defense accountability, and we shouldn't try to reach bipartisanship in defense. As the detainee scandal shows, it's important to have an aggressive opposition. And that's not just true when it comes to detainee issues. That would be true when it comes to any facet of national security. So any effort to really dilute partisanship is going to end up reducing accountability, not strengthening it in matters of national defense. What flows from that as well is that we should be wary of increasing the military's links with Parliament simply because they exist as a branch of the government. They are servants of the Crown, and their role is not to help keep that government accountable. There would be conflicts of interest at every level if we went down that road, so we have to be wary of that. Does that mean that nothing should be done to better accountability for national defense? No, not at all. We can and should have clear take-note debates and very aggressive take-note debates before any deployment of military forces outside of Canada, the purpose of that being to really ensure that the opposition has its view, that it can question the government's decisions, and that perhaps it can influence a government to change its mind. I think that's critical. We should actually be encouraging parliamentary committees to be more aggressive and to have access to better information when pertinent. And as well, we should really reinforce the military's role to provide factual information to Parliament without at the same time encouraging them to contradict their minister, which would be something quite unfortunate for larger accountability in civil military relations in Canada writ large. Now, in terms of governing national defense on the inside, I think the primary point I would make is before we simply decide that civil servants have no role in helping the military be accountable to the minister, it's far very important to understand the history of why that system came about and on what statute laws it's based.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Philippe Lagacé is an assistant professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Ottawa and a research associate with the Centre for Security and Defence Studies at Norman Patterson School of International Affairs at Carleton University. He is also the author of the study, Accountability for National Defense, Ministerial Responsibility, Military Command, and Parliamentary Oversight, published by the IRPP. It is available free of charge on our website at www.irpp.org.